I had a discussion with Wayne before. A lot of the original hymns were like chants. They just sang in that manner. And it wasn't until much longer that four-part harmony came along. In fact, in much of our brethren in Chile, that's all they sing is in. Everyone sings the melody, and they don't sing in parts until Heather came along. But well, her and others. So we're glad you're here. Tonight we're going to continue our series in Proverbs, where we're just taking a selected theme and talking about many of the Proverbs that talk about that theme. And so tonight, obviously, if you got the handout, if not, raise your hand and maybe someone will bring them from the back. We're going to talk about money. It's interesting, when you think about money, oh boy, there's so many things you could say about money, and you say, and people say, well, that's my problem, I don't have any. Are there a lot of proverbs or wise sayings about money that we use in the world? I just could share a couple with you. A fool and his money are soon parted. Is that true or false? It is often true, and that's the sad part about it. How about this? You can't barely see it. Money can't buy you happiness. True or false?
True.
Now, a lot of people come back and say, yeah, but I sure would like to try. You know, give me some, because my problem is the lack of money. Now, can that be the problem as well? And how, here's another one. Money talks. Is that true? You know, no plus a $50 bill all of a sudden turns into,
yes.
Sure, come on in, you know. And is that proper and correct? Well, in some scenarios, yes, but in others, it's called bribery, right? And so money is like the grease that causes the engine of industry and commerce to work. And when we think about money, we have all sorts of thoughts that money's evil. And how about this one? Money is the root of all evil. Have you ever heard that one? Is that true or false? Oh, you guys are good, because a good Bible student knows it's not money that is the root of all evil. Paul says it's the love of money. And so when we even talk about money, we have to understand money is just a neutral thing. It's a tool. In our case, it's not even metal, it's a piece of paper, unless you have coins. They used to be copper or silver, and now they're just some alloy that maybe be covered with something shiny, but it only has value that we put on it. And that's it. That's where it starts. It's neither good or bad, evil or righteous. It's just a tool. It's our attitude towards money that causes the problems or causes, you know, actually the good things to happen as well. So we want to look at some of the wise proverbs that Solomon wrote down with others, and look, glean from God's wisdom about money. And so we can frame an attitude from God's point of view about money. When we do our Financial Peace University, Dave Ramsey says there are more, he makes a big point about this, there are more texts about money in the Bible than any other subject. Did you realize that? I saw a list of 100 proverbs about money. Now we're going to look at all 100 of them. Unless you want it, you know, we can go through them. We can talk about them. We might be a little while, all right? But we're just going to look at some of the selected few. Now, there's a lot on the list, and some we'll just read to make the point, and some we'll slow down and talk about. But what we want to see that you should neither desire to be wealthy or poor, but desire righteousness, because it trumps it all. And righteousness will give us the right attitude and the right disposition to handle money and to use it properly. And then let us just remember before we start, as we have in the handout, that the source of all money comes from God. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 22, it is the blessing of the Lord that makes rich. And yet he adds no sorrow to it. And also in Deuteronomy, outside of the book of Proverbs, in chapter 8 and verse 18, you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who is giving you power to make wealth, that he may confirm his covenant with you, which he swore to your fathers. And we always have to remember that, that sometimes money is just a gift. We're blessed with it, not based on anything we have done. Sometimes it's an inheritance, sometimes it's a windfall. And sometimes it's because God has given you the ability and the time and chance in life to make great amounts of money. But even that ability and that opportunity, because you could have the ability but be in the wrong place. Case in point, can most people be financially successful in America if they just work diligently? Yes. Now, we already saw the Proverbs on diligence. That is true. Take that same person with the same wherewithal and you put him in, well, where I'm going to Africa. Is it a lot more challenging to accomplish the same things in Africa than it is here? You might not even be able to get an education in Africa that's comparable to here because your family could not afford to send you to college. You might not even finish high school because you have to work in the fields to support your family. You could be brilliant, but the opportunity wouldn't provide you with the occasion to actually exercise your abilities. And so wealth comes from who ultimately? The ability to make it and the opportunity. And let's never forget that, lest we become puffed up and think, I've done this by my own hand and my own might. So we're going to look at just some things as we go through here. And we're broken down into basically five categories. I love this one. Money's a good servant, but a bad master. Oscar Wilde says, nowadays people know the price of everything and the value of nothing. He died in 1900. Boy, would he say amen to that today? We don't understand what's truly important. So we want to manage money wisely or wealth wisely. And so I'm going to give you four principles from the book of Proverbs. The first one is we got to avoid extremes. There's this mindset that's prevailed too long and maybe came out of the Puritans, I don't know, that there's some virtue in being poor. That poverty is somehow some righteous characteristic, and that's not the case at all. And yet there's another extreme that if you are righteous and you have God's favor, you will be wealthy. And that attitude causes those people to look down upon the poor as though somehow they're unfaithful or unrighteous or sinners. Now the Pharisees did that as well, right? Now, those are both extremes, and they're both incorrect. And so they might be part of your extreme, but you can't be caught up into them. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 15. And from now on, I'll try not to say Proverbs. I'll just say 10:15 for those who are listening on the tape. The rich man's wealth is his fortress. The ruin of the poor is their poverty. Does that seem to elevate wealth and to show poverty in a lesser light? And then that's not chapter 10 and verse 15. I'm sorry. What verse is it? It's on your handout. Poverty and shame will come to him who neglects discipline, but he regards reproof will be honored. Honored with what? No doubt with wealth. And then you look at this saying that we've already joked about. We know that money can't buy you happiness. But does poverty bring happiness to anybody? When you are struggling just to feed your children or yourselves, is there any joy in that? And I say, well, sometimes poverty comes upon us by no means of ourselves, like in the Great Depression. We're not talking about that. We're talking about poverty that comes because of lack of discipline, the lack of due diligence, being a sluggard. Remember our Proverbs on that? And if anyone that wants to esteem poverty as some noble thing, just go to a third world country and have people that are skin and bones reach out their hands and they're just begging for some food and not be able to give it to them and see how that makes you feel. No, there's nothing redeeming about poverty, nothing at all. So, well, then, you know, wealth is the key then. That's the answer. No. Wealth doesn't mean you're successful. Wealth doesn't mean that you're righteous. Wealth just means what? You have lots of money. Now, you may have achieved it righteously and as a blessing from God, but are there are those who achieve wealth unrighteously through crookedness, through scheming. And yet some people have the attitude, well, if they're rich, they must have cheated someone somewhere along the way. That's a wrong attitude, isn't it? Because we're judging people's hearts, and that's not the case at all. We've made the comment many times that many of the most righteous people in the Bible were very wealthy because they were blessed by their God. So when we look at this, when we avoid extremes, we have to be very careful. In chapter 23, in verse 4 through 5, he says, don't worry yourself to gain wealth. That's an interesting comment. Cease from your consideration of it. In other words, don't make it your number one goal in life. For as Christians, we're seeking first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Why? Because when you set your eyes on it, it's gone. For wealth will certainly make itself wings like an eagle that flies towards the heavens. Another proverb says, riches don't last forever. Now, when a person thinks that's not the case, well, I'm going to get wealthy and my riches are going to be my security and I'll always have it. What has to happen in the economy, politically? Just one 9/11, one, you know, stock market crash, and what can happen to a person's entire portfolio? Wiped out. How secure is wealth? No, don't put your security and trust in it because it can fly away just that fast. Another one in chapter 30 in verse 7 through 9. I want you to read this one. Because when we understand what the wise man is saying, this text will have a lot more meaning to us. And it is said this is the only prayer that's found in the book of Proverbs. And they're noted as the words of Agur in the heading under chapter 30. But notice verse 7. Two things I ask of thee. And this would be a beautiful prayer for all of us. Do not refuse me before I die. What are the two things? Keep deception and lies far from me. You know, don't let people lie to me and deceive me. Don't let Satan deceive me. I want to know the truth. Because the truth is going to set us free. Now, the second thing, you might be what? You know, save me, righteousness? Well, here's what it is. Give me neither poverty nor riches. See, both extremes, he says, I don't want either. Well, why? You know, I can understand the poverty. Don't give me poverty, but go ahead and give me some of the riches. Well, why? Lest I be full, that's when you're rich, and end up denying thee. Is there a real possibility that the person who is wealthy can forget about his God? This person is wise and understands that. He says, I don't want to be so rich that I forget that I need you in every day of my life. Lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Or the other extreme, lest I be in want and steal and profane the name of my God. Because when you're so hungry and starving, sometimes that's what happens. People will steal. He says, I don't want either extreme. Just place me somewhere in the middle. Those are the wise man's words of his prayer. So the next thing I want you to see is then let's keep our priorities straight. Because money isn't everything. And yet, in many people's lives, it is. And it becomes a topic of conversation. It becomes a source of a lot of our marriage problems, the lack of money. But it's never the most important. And so we have to keep our priorities straight. There's many things that are more important than money. We've already looked at some of them. A good name is to be desired more than great riches, better than silver and gold. And do you believe that? Well, if we do, we're not going to desire money over those things. I just kicked something and it rolled across. I didn't know what it was. Proverbs 15 and verse 7. Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened ox. Now, in their society, a big lavish dinner was when you got to kill a steer or an ox in this case. And with that ox, you could feed multiple people. So that's a meal of a rich man, correct? And on the other hand, here's a person that's eating vegetables. No meat, because meat is very, you know, expensive. And again, third world countries, when we go to Africa, to have meat is really a luxury. But just eating vegetables or eating rice. He says, which is better, to have a meager meal with love or to have the fatted ox? He says, love trumps that wealth. If that wealth comes with hatred and strife. Notice the similar one. Better is a dry morsel. What's that? A piece of dry, crusty bread with quietness than a house full of feasting with strife. You might have all the wealth in the world and eat all to your heart's desire, but if there's strife, it's better to have just a piece of bread as long as there's some peace. Are there things better than wealth in this world that trump it? And we can go on and look at these things. He says, you got to make sure you choose the better thing. Chapter 8, verse 10 through 11. Take my instruction and not silver, and knowledge rather than choicest gold. For wisdom is better than jewels, and desirable things cannot compare with her. So when it comes to wisdom, it trumps riches all the time. Why? Because wisdom, when employed properly, can often gain you wealth. Is that not correct? And so would you rather have wealth with no wisdom or wisdom and acquire wealth? Remember one of the earthly proverbs is, a fool and his money is quickly departed. So you might have wealth but no wisdom. You might not have it tomorrow. Case in point, you've seen the studies and you've seen the examples. People that win the lottery. They win sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars. It just dropped in their life. No wisdom. What happens to it within a few short years? Over and over and over. Disappears. All these new friends show up. All these lost relatives they never heard of. And all of a sudden, through bad investments and everything, they're broke. It happens over and over. And I said, man, I it's hard for me to imagine. Because that wouldn't be me. Just give me the chance and I'll prove it. No, the wise man says, you get wisdom. It trumps wealth any day. And notice what he says. Adversity pursues sinners, but the righteous will be rewarded with. Now that's found in chapter 13 and verse 21. The righteous will be rewarded. Now, just a disclaimer. There are a lot of people that falsely teach that, you know, the health and wealth gospel, that if you seed, you know, $10, the Lord will give you $1,000 back. You know, you hear it all the time. All you do is turn on a TV evangelist to this day. And sometimes Ann goes, what are you watching that for? And that's what they're doing. They just continue. And there's enough people that are gullible to send in their money thinking if they send them money, they're going to get 10 times back. Now, we're not talking about this, but here's the truth, isn't it? That God blesses the righteous, and sometimes he blesses them with wealth. So really? Yes, he does. Why would he do that? Because he loves you, and he wants to bless you. And second of all, I want you to note, and we're going to see it in just a little bit, when you have proved yourself to be righteous, that means you're wise, you're faithful to him. He says, I'm going to give you tools to use to serve me, because I can trust you with them. Now, I'll give you an example. When my young son and my kids were just small, I had a lot of power tools in the house, cordless drills and saws. My favorite tool is a sawzall, or reciprocating saw. You know, the one that the saw goes straight out and ribbed back and forth. You can cut anything, right? You can carve up a deer or wild game, right? Would you let a four-year-old play with that?
No.
No, because they would cut up themselves and their sister and whatever else. It would be serious. You would be the fool to do that. Now, it's just a tool, though. Is there anything wrong with that tool?
No,
it's great. You cannot build without one. You can't tear down without one because you can cut nails that are just... Anyway, don't get me started. They're wonderful. All right? Reciprocating saw, right? God's the same way. Money is just a tool. But in the wrong hands, it's dangerous. not only can it ruin the souls of others around you, you can ruin your own, lose your own soul. And God's not going to entrust certain tools with certain people because they're not faithful yet. They're not mature yet. He can't trust them in the employment of them because he knows it'll be there to their own demise. Now, does that mean that if I automatically mature and become righteous, I'll get wealth? No, it doesn't. Well, does that mean if I didn't get wealth, that means I'm not wise and mature? No, it doesn't mean that. It's just a truism that often God blesses those who are righteous with prosperity. Not always, because you're giving me a lot of examples where he doesn't, but often he does. And you just have to consider that. So the point is, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and then perhaps he will add these other things to you. So keep your priorities straight. Notice Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 21. To endow those, he says, who love me with wealth, that I may fill their treasuries. Chapter 23 and 23. Buy truth and don't sell it. Get wisdom and instruction and wisdom. In chapter 13 and verse 21. Avoid adversity, pursue sinners, but righteous will be rewarded with prosperity. And so keep your priorities straight. Let God bless you according to his timetable. Now, the next thing you see in your handout, some people can be rich but bankrupt at the same time. And that's probably the saddest paradox in the life, that you're wealthy, sometimes beyond measure, but yet spiritually bankrupt. And who are we reminded of that Jesus spoke about in the New Testament that fit this bill? Luke chapter 12, the rich man in chapter 16, right? He had a great harvest. He said, what am I going to do with all this harvest? He said, I know what I'll do. I'll build bigger barns and I'll fill my barns. And then I'm just going to retire and kick back and eat, drink, and be merry. And what was Jesus' commentary on him? He said, so now your soul's going to be required of you this very hour. But what did he call him? You fool. Foolish. Because what was he trusting in? His wealth. And that's his security rather than God. He was wealthy but spiritually bankrupt. And that's a terrible place to be, isn't it? And that's why the words of the prayer was, neither let me be rich or poor. Rich so that I'm full and I forget thee. Now that can happen. So notice some of the text that he says in chapter 15, verse 16. Fear the Lord is better than wealth. I'm just pulling out the thoughts from these verses. In chapter 16, verse 8, righteousness is better than great treasure. Chapter 28, verse 6, better is a poor man who walks in integrity. And so you show me a poor man that you can count on him because he's faithful and he'll honor his word. He's better than a rich man any day. Now, do you see him that way? Is that how we evaluate people? Or do we see the rich as more successful and who I want to befriend? Or do we see the man of integrity? Well, the Lord sees the latter. Better is the little of the righteous. What does that mean? They're poor. The little of the righteous than the abundance of the many wicked. They have a lot, but they're spiritually bankrupt. That's in Psalms 37, verse 16. So chapter 19, verse 4 through 7. I want you to just read this with me. Chapters 19, because there's a lot of verses. You know, my old Bible, I started highlighting the Proverbs that stood out to me. You know what the problem with that is? Yeah, every page is highlighted, every verse. Because when you start reading them, they're like, wow, that's really good. Highlight that. But I encourage you to highlight the Proverbs so they become part of a roadmap as you're looking here. Look in verse 4, chapter 19. Wealth adds many friends. We already referred to that when someone wins the lottery. But a poor man is separated from his friend. That's actually the friends they do have, they leave. A false witness will not go unpunished. He tells lies when no one escapes. But back to their thought, many will entreat the favor of a generous man. Why will they entreat it? They'll befriend them and entreat them because they're looking for a gift or a handout. And every man is a friend to him who gives gifts. Now, every man, is this a generalized statement? There's always exceptions, but generally, when someone gives gifts, who's in line? Yeah, I'll be right there. No, he says most everyone will stand in line. Everyone loves a free thing. And so it's deceiving, wealth. Because sometimes when a person's wealthy, they might think, well, God's favored me. I must be righteous because I have all these friends. No, they're there because they're selfish and they're taking advantage of you. And for those that do have any kind of degree of wealth, beware. There will be people lined up at your door, and the best word you can use is what? No. Right? Because they're not your friends. They like your money and not you. Now, is that everyone that comes to you? No, because we're going to talk about helping the poor in a second. But we have to be aware of this. The wise man, he said, I've experienced this and I see it in life. Verse 7, all the brothers of a poor man hate him. How much more do his friends go far from him? He pursues them with words, but they're gone. Help me, help me. No, they're out of there. Because we're not going to help you. We're going to get in line to get money ourselves. He who gets wisdom loves his own soul. He who keeps understanding will find good. So in other words, get wisdom over wealth. So I don't want to be a person that I'm rich but bankrupt. Chapter 11 and verse 6. I'll read that one to you, that he says, the righteous of the upright will deliver them, but the treacherous will be caught by their own greed. A lot of people that are wealthy in the world, and we not set our eyes on them with jealousy or envy, like David or the psalmist did, where he said, I was on a slippery slope. I almost failed because I became jealous of those who were wicked and unrighteous, but yet so well fed and well off. But he said, I considered their end. What does that mean? Their end when they stand before God and how bankrupt they were. And he says, that's when he came back to his senses. Chapter 11, verse 26, he holds withhold grain, the people will curse him. But blessing will be on the head of him who sells it. Sometimes the greedy are just that. They will never help anyone. And they're cursed by those around them. And that's a good transition into the next point, where God asks us through the Proverbs to remember the poor. There's a whole bunch of verses, I don't even have them all in there, about our attitude towards the poor when it comes to money. And it's not surprising. It shouldn't be surprising to you. Because central to the whole Bible and to who God is to helping those who cannot help themselves. Now, we're talking in Romans about grace. And the common definition we give to grace is what? Undeserved favor or grace, undeserved gift. And that is true. I'm going to give you a more working definition, and we're going to use it in Romans, and I might as well introduce it now. Grace is doing for you what you cannot do for yourself. And that's very important you understand the distinction between it, because I can grace somebody with something with they have it already. I mean, they have the capacity to obtain it themselves, but I'm just going to bless them with it. Anyway, I'm just going to give it to you. That doesn't capture the heart of grace. The heart of grace is God's looking down on us and he says, you're in trouble. And we're talking about man and their condition spiritually. You can't do anything to restore your relationship with me. I'll do it for you. And it cost God dearly, didn't it? He had to give his only beloved son. So grace is doing for others what they're not able to do for themselves. Now, why this is important in this concept? Because when there is someone that is able to feed themselves, able to work by their hand, but choose not to, do they need grace? No. Actually, Paul says the opposite. Don't feed them, right? Because you're just going to enable them in this sluggard lifestyle, because that's a definition of a sluggard. But now let's turn the page. Are there people, no fault of their own, because of life's conditions and calamities that are throwing them. Maybe it's the economy. Maybe it's their health. Maybe it's relationship. Maybe later. Who knows? But they are not able to help themselves currently at the moment. Do those situations exist? And if they did not receive help from one another, they might go hungry and not even eat. That's what he refers to when he talks about the poor. And you will always have the poor with you. Some people move into that category and then quickly move out. Some people move there and they stay there for the rest of their life. No fault of their own. Maybe they're physically handicapped. Maybe they've been abandoned. Maybe they're orphaned. Lots of scenarios, right? You might be there and then later recover and become a wealthy person and then in turn show grace to those who cannot help themselves by helping them. That's throughout through the whole scripture, so you shouldn't be surprised that it's found in the book of Proverbs. We'll just show a couple of them. Chapter 14, verse 21. He who despises his neighbor sins. Whoa. Look down upon your neighbor like, look at you. You're just poor and miserable. You know, you're sinning. But happy is he who is gracious to the poor. See the contrast? The one that despises neighbor, I'm not going to help you. You got yourself in your own problem. Get yourself out. No, grace does what you're not able to do at this moment. You can't help yourself. I'll step in and intervene. Next one, he who oppresses the poor taunts his maker, but he who is gracious to the needy honors him. And we'll go on. Look at this one here. He says, he who mocks the poor taunts his maker, but he who rejoices at calamity will not go unpunished. There is one who scatters and yet increases all the more. There's one who withholds what is justly due and it only results in want. The generous man will be prosperous. And he who waters himself will be watered. Now let's break this one down. Because to withhold is to sin when given the opportunity. There's one who scatters. What does that mean? Scatter. What? To give. You're giving. What happens to him? Why would God increase the guy that's scattering? Because when he's showing grace, he says, I can trust you with a sozzle. You know, this powerful tool. Is money powerful? Yeah, it can change people's lives. It can save a person's life from death, physically for a while. Money is so powerful. And God says, I'll trust you with it because I've watched what you do with it. You scatter it, I'll give you more. Because I know I can count on you to get the job done. Not the greedy person that takes what I give them and just holds it to themselves. There's one who withholds what is justly due, and yet he only results in what? That which he does has, he's going to lose. Because he who is faithful in a little will be faithful in a lot. He who is not, he will even lose what he does have. Jesus said that in the parable of faithfulness. The generous man will be prosperous, and he who waters, what does that mean? Waters other people's life with blessings. He himself will be watered. Isn't that a beautiful thought? Now, when thinking about this in preparation, I said, well, yeah, that's for the wealthy, so I'm glad I don't have to follow this. See how quickly I excused myself? How many times we said, everyone in America is wealthy? He said, well, not as others, but if you live in America, do we have to make the case we're all wealthy, or can we all raise hands and say, I'm wealthy? Can we all say that? So I don't care where you are in the economic status, you have the capacity to help someone else. And I'm talking to the young married people, the single people, the people that have, you know, kids in the middle years and all the money goes to the kids. You say, well, I don't have enough wealth. I'm just spending all my money on the kids. I'm going to suggest if you don't start doing it now, God's not going to trust you later either. Because you learn the skills to be faithful and righteous by giving with what you have now and not with what you don't have later. Does that make sense? We're responsible to respond to our ability now. So please don't wait until you're married. That's when I'm going to start helping people. You can help people right now. I said, well, man, I don't make much but minimum wage. Well, you probably live with your folks or live with someone else and you don't have many expenses. Could you help someone? Yes. Says, well, I'm only 35 and I got three kids and boy, they eat a lot of food. And could you not go out and help someone? We're all wealthy, and if we agree we are, let's start giving now, because that's righteousness, isn't it? Pursue righteousness. And then God says, there's someone I can trust. I'll even give them more. Now, to open your hand and give is the greatest spiritual exercise there is in many aspects. It's one of the greatest. Because most of their hands like this, right? And it's hard to open it. Because when we open it, I just happen to have, I don't know why, I shouldn't do this, a $100 bill. It's paper and it says, in God we trust. But here it's like this, because what does that hand show? In this money, I trust. That's why I don't want to let go of it, because I worked hard for it, it's mine, and $100 can, you know, buy a lot. Boy, in Africa, a dollar a day, in some places $2 a day. This is 2 months' wages or more, 3 months in some places. 3 months' wages right here. That's a lot of money to them. But it's just paper. The only value is what we place on it, right? And for me to open my hand and give it, I got to release the, conquer the hold it has over my heart. The hold it has over my heart. I got to master it so I don't become a slave to money. You say, well, yeah, that's for the wealthy. No, we all agreed. We're all wealthy. How much control does money have over you? Are you able to give just a dollar, a 10? And I'm not to say put in the collection. I'm talking about helping people that genuinely need help. So, well, I don't see any. Yeah, someone said it for me. We have to open our eyes. Because they're all around us. And sometimes God will put us in a position where you can uniquely help someone and no one else can. And he's asked, just seeing what we're going to do. So he who oppresses the poor to make for himself or more for himself or who gives to the rich will come to poverty. See, that's the opposite. Because I think God in his wisdom says, you know, I need to discipline you since you don't have the capacity to use what you do have. You're so selfish yet still. And you're still my child. I want to save your soul. I'm going to make you poor. Can you see God doing that as an act of discipline to get us to wake up and start trusting him and opening our hand? And so when we look at this, remember that, you know, God loves the giver. One who is gracious to a poor man. Love this thought. Chapter 19 and verse 17. You're lending to God. That's a curious thing. Why would you say you're lending to God? Does God take notice of the poor? So he gives Dave money for whatever, however he acquired it. And he says, Dave, would you help that person as a loan to me? Because I need to help that person. I want to use you. You know what's happening? So he's taking a loan from Dave to help that person. And, well, is he going to pay Dave back? Well, yeah, he said already it increases. And if it doesn't happen this life, you know it's going to happen in the next. Because that's what Paul said in Philippians 4. I seek the gift for the profit that it increases to your account, talking about spiritually. Setting up treasures or laying up treasures in heaven. So when you look at that, who would not loan to the Lord? So the Lord comes to ask you, could you give me a few dollars so I can help this person? No, do it yourself. Can you imagine saying that to God after he gave you the ability to make wealth to start with? And everything really is a loan from God. It's his to start with. Chapter 22, verse 9, he who is generous will be blessed, for he gives some of his food to the poor. He who gives to the poor will never want, but he who shuts his eyes will have a curse. Now, let me just say this. And then we'll move on from this, and we're almost done. There's really not a lot of poor in our community that fits the definition of poor here. Because most people do have food, do have the capacity to make money, but there are people that have problems. Some of them are even homeless. Generally, most of the people that are on the street corner asking for food or money, they do not fit this category. All right? And you say, well, I'm confused, different. Talk to me later, but they're generally looking just for a handout. And some of them are mentally ill, and you have to decide whether they are incapable of helping themselves, and then that's where I'm going to grace them. See the difference? But that means you're going to have to do an inquiry. And so there are resources to help a lot of those people. I'm not talking about them in general. I'm talking about people you know in your life that you could help, and people that are your neighbors or family members. Finally, chapter 29, verse 7, the righteous is concerned with the rights of the poor. They're concerned. But notice this. The wicked doesn't understand such concern. Isn't that an amazing contrast? I don't get it. Why would you want to help the poor? It doesn't register. Why do you even care? And that's the wicked of the world. But the righteous, they're intimately concerned about the welfare of the poor. That's why God came down. Although he was rich, he became poor so we can be wealthy through his poverty. Isn't that what Christ did for us? All right, that's an example. Now, so we have to practice some self-control. Couple of verses here. The plans of the diligent leads to surely to advantage, chapter 22, verse 15. But he who is hasty comes surely to poverty. Another one I'll marry to that. Poor is he who works with a negligent hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. Are there any quick rich schemes that work? Get rich quick schemes. Who's always looking for them? The diligent? The one that works hard? Are they looking for that? No, it's always the greedy, the sluggard, the someone that doesn't want to do the job that's required to obtain money to provide for themselves. There aren't any. They're just not. And so don't let anyone deceive you by saying they are. Now notice what he goes on to say in verse 11 of chapter 13. Wealth obtained by fraud, it'll just dwindle. You'll lose it. But the one who gathers by labor, you'll increase it. Put a value on hard work and working with your hands. Chapter 28, verse 19 through 20. He who tills his land will have plenty of food. That's obvious. You plant in the spring, you'll have a harvest in the fall. If you sleep during the spring, you'll go hungry in the fall. All right? That's what he's saying. But he who follows empty pursuits will have poverty and plenty. Oh, man, this will get me rich. You know, I can just do this. No, those are empty pursuits. A faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who makes haste to be rich will not go unpunished. So don't be greedy that you can get deceived in all these get-rich-quick scams. Here's the most important thing we can quit with. When it comes down to it, has money ever saved anybody? When you stand before God and you say, but Lord, I'm really, 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 really wealthy. Will he say, well done, thou good and faithful servant? Does money buy anyone's way into heaven? It saves nobody. And I say that, we know that. So you understand the value and put it in the proper perspective. Money is neither evil or good. It's neither righteous or wicked. Money is neutral. It's all about our attitude towards it. It's so important in our life, but yet righteousness trumps it all. It's supreme importance. So a couple of verses in that. Ill-gotten gains don't profit, but righteousness will deliver you from death. And then in chapter 11, verse 4, riches do not profit in the day of wrath. God could care less how much money you have. But righteousness will deliver you again from death. And then the last one. He who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like a green leaf. Isn't that a beautiful picture? So rich or poor, it does not matter. If I seek my first God's righteousness and his kingdom, I'm going to make it to heaven. Notice when we wrap this all up, it's not money that will cause someone to ruin their life. As we started with, it's the love of money, isn't it? And it's not money that determines whether you're faithful or unrighteous. Because even the best people could be poor and be impoverished. Best people in God's eyes. The rich, though, remember this, chapter 22 and verse 2. The rich and the poor have a common bond. This is Proverbs 22, verse 2. You know what it is? The rich and the poor have a common bond. The Lord is maker of them all. He loves them both equally, and he will judge them all both righteously. So don't desire either to be rich or poor. If you have to work 40 hours a day, work as hard as you can in those 40 hours. Work smart, and if God blesses you wealth, so be it. It's better than working uneducated and working foolishly and working for meager wages. Doesn't that make sense? You got to work 40 hours? Work at 40 hours at a job that'll make you as much money as you can. Be a good steward of your time and opportunity. Don't be lazy and say, well, I got to work, but I'll just, dig ditches all my life. Not that there's anything wrong with digging ditches. But if you have the capacity to be a CEO and work 40 hours, be the CEO, because that's being faithful in the opportunity that God has given you. But it's don't desire to be rich, desire to be faithful. Be faithful to God. Don't desire to be poor, because poverty never got anyone into heaven on the basis of their poverty. But desire to be righteous, because the rewards of the humble, chapter 22, verse 4, and the fear of the Lord are riches, honor, and life. There's a fountain free. And by God's grace, he'll save you right tonight. And he's promised salvation to all of us that are here. And it's free. That means it cost him, but not us. But we have to accept it. If we can help you in any way, won't you come as we stand and sing this song?